I'd like to call the meeting to order, please. Busy, would you please call the roll?
Board Member Durham?
Here.
Board Member Flores?
Here.
Board Member Goff?
Here.
Board Member Maznak?
Here.
She's
sound
really
like
here.
The Great Oz. Board Member McClellan?
Here.
Board Member Rankin?
Here.
And Board Member Schroeder?
Here. Today we're going to discuss a couple of proposed items for legislation. Ms. Mello, would you like to introduce them to us, please?
Yes, thank you,
introduce
Madam
us
Chair.
To them, something like that.
Is this on?
Yes.
Or can you hear me? Okay. Mm-hmm. I actually thought we would start, if you don't mind, with House Bill 1276, which is the bill concerning prohibiting the use of certain restraints upon public students. We discussed this bill with the legislative contacts. I know that Board Member Durham is recommending an opposed position. I have to be honest with you, I will let Board Member Goff speak for herself because I wasn't clear on what her recommendation was. And if you'd like to wait until after I explain the bill, that's
fine.
Yeah,
would you explain the bill first?
Of course. So this bill prohibits the use of chemical, mechanical, or prone restraints on students when they are at school or in a school activity. And it starts as just a flat-out prohibition. It does go on to say that if a student is openly displaying a deadly weapon, then the prohibition does not apply. It also does not apply to the use of mechanical or prone restraints by an armed security officer who is trained. So for some of the larger districts or larger urban districts, it's not uncommon that they would have a school safety officer present. So if that person is appropriately trained, then they would be able to use these techniques. And then, for what it's worth, prone position means a face-down position. I didn't know that, so maybe I would. I learned that by reading the bill. Essentially, it does two other things. One, it requires school districts to report on any instance of, they have to give any documentation to the Department of Ed when there's any use of restraint upon any student in the school district. Same thing goes for charter schools, so it applies equally to all schools. Each year, they have to report the total number of incidents of physical restraint, total number of incidents involving a hold or a restraint in a prone position, total number of students placed in physical restraint, total number of incidents of seclusion, including identifying how many such incidents occurred in a locked room, total number of incidents in response to which a school resource officer or law enforcement was summoned, total number of students placed in seclusion, total number of incidents of physical restraint or seclusion that resulted in injury or death to any person, total number of incidents of physical restraint or seclusion that involved one or more staff members who were not trained, the demographic characteristics of each student who was physically restrained or secluded, and whether that student was receiving services pursuant to an individual education plan. So it basically requires that districts give the department all of this data. And then on or after August 1st, 2018, the Department of Ed has to make the information publicly available on its website. The other main thing the bill does is require that the state board promulgate rules establishing a process by which a student or a parent or a legal guardian may formally complain about the use of restraints. So that's my description of what the bill does. The CASB case, Rural Schools Alliance, are all opposed to the bill. Their reasoning for that opposition is that there was apparently a stakeholder process 6 or 7 years ago convened by the Department of Education, which led to the creation of a set of rules that you all have right now. They believe that those rules are appropriate. They believe that that process was sufficiently inclusive in leading to those rules, and they do not believe that what they perceive as an almost flat-out ban on restraint is appropriate. Not because, I should make clear, I've had not a single person from a school or a district say, we are really excited to put kids in prone restraint. It's not about that at all. The good news is this doesn't actually happen that often, and that is true according to both sides of this issue. I think the school districts would take the position, particularly if you're in a smaller rural district, that if you have a really serious incident where a student is, you know, a danger to themselves or someone else, you know, law enforcement, they don't have a school resource officer, and law enforcement could be a very long way away for them. And I think that is certainly a concern for some of the smaller rural districts. So that's kind of my presentation of where things are, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Ms. Goff?
That wasn't me.
I know, but didn't you want to?
No, I'm willing to wait.
Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Board Member McCollum.
Thank you. Do we know what prompted this new proposed legislation? Do we know, was there an incident? Were there complaints? Did someone find that the product of that stakeholder process, that outreach and input process, was that somehow deemed insufficient? And do we know why? I guess I'm asking why now, why the change?
Madam Chair, Board Member McClellan, you know, and this is always, I just have to say, like, I can give you my understanding of their intentions, but, you know, I can't necessarily put myself in their position. It has not been described to me as being provoked by any particular incident. I think there are families and groups. Sometimes it is, there are issues. These issues arise, I think, more frequently within the special education population or students with IEPs. Not to say they're exclusive to that, but so I think there are parents and groups who work with those students who have concerns. And I, again, based on just talking to the proponents, I think they come from a position that this is never acceptable, that we shouldn't be doing this, and we shouldn't, if it happens, we sure as heck should know how often it's happening. And I think their goal around the reporting and the collection of data is really to have it be a learning experience. I mean, I will tell you, I have not gotten the sense that it's intended, in their minds at least, to be used in any punitive way. But it, more in a way to say, gosh, let's look at these trends, let's learn from this so that we can continue to, in their minds, have less of this happening.
So I'm confused that it's a bill that prohibits it and then wants you to report it. Somehow those two don't go together.
Madam Chair, I share that confusion. But I will say, it does prohibit it, and the reporting is broader than just the prone restraint. So the reporting is for any time a student was restrained or was put in seclusion in a locked room, that list I read to you. So
right.
I had to read through that myself this morning and wrap my own brain around that.
Board Member Flores.
Is it true that then parents are not allowed to intervene, or you said something about parents, and I took it to mean that they can't go before the school district or they're restrained in some way from speaking out? Or
Madam Chair, Board Member Flores, I am not aware of any restriction on the ability of parents to talk to their schools or their school districts about this issue. I think this would add an additional entity to the process by allowing them to make a complaint directly to the Department of Education.
Board Member Rankin.
I want to go back to what Board Member McClellan said. How far along is this in the process?
Madam Chair, Board Member, Madam Vice Chair, it has been introduced. It has not been heard in committee yet.
Not heard in any committee, because that would be something I would really be interested in. The question she asked is the first one that should come out of somebody's mouth on that committee. You know, why are we doing this? And also the next question, and if it gets to the committee and you take good notes, is going to be, is our state exceptionally high in this incident area? How do we compare with other states, even the way it is? And do other states have such a law on the books? And then I have a question for you. I have to say, I didn't read this bill in detail. But if one student is attacking another student, does this prohibit the teacher from stepping in? And I'm thinking of a rural school.
I was logging in to make sure I had the most current status on the bill, Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair. I think what they would say in terms of the number of incidents is that we don't know, right? Because we don't have any central data collection. And so, you know, again, everyone speaks anecdotally as this is not a particularly, this isn't happening thousands of times, but no one has the data.
Well, we don't know.
Right. Well, right. We don't know what we don't know. We'd certainly find out more about what's going on in other states. And I think it is a matter of interpretation in terms of answering your last question. I don't think the proponents would say this prohibits a teacher from trying to stop a fight. I think they would say it prohibits a teacher from taking one of those kids and holding them in a prone restraint position as a way of doing that, unless that student is brandishing a deadly weapon. Right?
Unless that student is bigger than you are, than the teacher.
What are the reporting requirements at this time to do whatever they have to do?
Madam Chair, and I'll be happy to have staff correct me if I have this wrong. I don't believe there are any reporting requirements, except for...
Oh, I should have said that differently. Reporting and notification. Are parents automatically notified always when their kid has been restrained?
Madam Chair, so now we're into an area that is a little outside of my expertise. I'd be happy to defer to your staff here on that.
Got it?
Got it. Madam Chairman, it's really a local decision about their policies and how that all transpires. I know that in the special education realm, we do have students who exhibit behaviors that sometimes can be self-injurious, and so staff might need to do holds. However, prone is really the key word there. So there are different holds that might be implemented at the local level. As far as data collection goes, that would all be a part of the functional behavior assessment, and notification of parents would all be a part of local policy and procedure through the individuals of the education plan and the timing of everything. If you have a student in crisis, there might be more frequent notifications to parents, and if it's more sporadic, it might be more in line with their regular procedure.
So there are not statewide rules around this?
Not to my knowledge, Madam Chairman.
Or even national rules.
Madam Chair, can I just, do you mind if I clarify? There's not statewide rules defining restraints, but there's some set of rules that the State Board of Education adopted 6 or 7 years ago. I mean, I'm asking. That's what I was told today from the school districts as part of their...
I would have to go back and catch up on where those are and see what they look like in context.
And I don't remember them. Board Member Goff.
Thank you. Couple of things. Do we have or not any statewide standard? Is there any standard part of the conduct code that districts use? Now, I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that each district develops its own conduct code. And parallel or in line with that, schools and districts need to report the discipline data. So are any of these kinds of incidents included in, or anything that could even relate to it, in the required discipline data reporting? The other thing I'd wonder is if, and I don't know, Toby, if you'd remember this or not, it seems like there was a lot of conversation, I believe it was a piece of legislation that was addressed. It was longer than 6 or 7 years ago. Senator Suzanne Williams, I do recall, was the sponsor, and it had specifically to do with prone restraint. And I'm not remembering well whether or not that took into account some of the specificity that this one has. And I believe it was mostly geared toward special education circumstances. But all of that in line with the conduct code and its accompanying data reporting requirements, I don't know. I would wonder if a piece of legislation is or is not necessary in order to include this more detailed list of things that districts would be responsible for. And I also kind of want to back up and go back to Joyce's comment about the student responsibility. One of the situations where I remember hearing not more than a handful of cases has involved students in restraint situations of other students. And it is, a couple of them have happened within the school building, and I will say mostly in regard to a sports situation. So I'm curious as to whether this is geared directly toward the adult role, the adult activities, or if there is anything that might have been mentioned to be considered around the role of students as they fulfill their responsibilities of the conduct code. whether that's a school-adopted set of guidelines or a district, or if there's a state template upon which districts can elaborate. But I would know if you would know all of that list of answers, but I would need to know that before I know where I am on this bill. That's why I was hoping we'd be able to talk about it today before I commit to anyway. I understand and I agree with the need to address this type of thing, but I think it needs to be a lot clearer what domain it really applies to. If there is a problem in a certain area, such as special education students, and then how that impacts the discipline practices in schools, it's just, for me, it's still too vague. And I'm not a real fan of requiring more data reporting without really having a good justification of what it's going to be, what it's for, and why they're doing it. So if you have to know where I am as far as a position word, I'd say monitor, because I don't know enough to commit myself to one way or the other.
I'm wondering whether we can get a little bit of background. What do we have on the books?
Yeah.
I'm a little, yes. Given your memory, which I know is very good, I am wondering whether we don't already have some of this, perhaps, in law or in rule. That would be helpful. Board Member Flores.
Now I'm wondering about what prone means. What exactly is prone here? What does prone mean?
Prone position is defined as means a face down position.
Oh.
Prone restraint means a restraint in which the individual who is being restrained is secured in a prone position. Wow, they found a lot of prone opportunities to use the word prone in those definitions, didn't they?
Okay.
Board Member Durham.
Very hard to see you, sir.
Pardon me?
It's very hard
I'm
to
hiding.
See you.
I'm hiding. Sorry. Okay. Thank you. I think there are procedures and policies in place, although I'm not as familiar with them as I'd like to be. But I think more importantly, when this bill came up, I asked Ms. Mello to determine whether or not the rural schools were taking a position against the bill, and whether or not the school district or the school executives or the school boards were taking a position against the bill. And my understanding, Jennifer, is that the answer to those questions is yes, they are. And it seemed to me that this would be a good opportunity to perhaps support the people who are on the firing line and will have to live with the consequences of this bill. And I think the origin of this bill really is Ms. Rankin made a very good case. You know, before the legislature goes out and meddles and stuff, in theory they ought to have a good reason. That's a very high standard, but but I think in this case it's pretty difficult to demonstrate a really strong need case for this kind of intervention. And I think this is more related to kind of the national trends that you see against law enforcement of all types. That is, and we certainly saw it over the last 12 months on the national level, and there's clearly an effort nationally to limit the ability to expel students, whether they're disruptive or threatening or otherwise, which I think is inappropriate. I think those decisions, again, are better made by people on the firing line that have to live with the consequences of those decisions. And this is just one more interference with the decision-making ability, because you can't possibly describe in this bill every kind of situation that would lead a reasonable person to find it necessary to apply appropriate restraints to protect others or perhaps the individual themselves from self-harm. And so you have this amorphous, you know, you really would have some question of what you even had to support, report in this. But if you got sent to the corner with the dunce cap on, which not that that ever happened to me, but is that isolation that has to be reported here? Is that isolated enough? So I think it's a bad bill just for those reasons, and I think we ought to support those people who are going to have to live with the consequences of the bill, and they have clearly indicated they don't want to have to live with the consequences. So I'd move we oppose House Bill 1276.
Do we have a second?
I second it.
Thank you. It does seem like an overreaction. At the very least, it's an overreaction to something that may have happened. I would still like to know what it is that we do have on the books. What is that we do report? What is it that parents learn about what happens with their kids? Because that would be the one thing that would concern me a little bit.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Yes, Pam, go ahead.
I'm sorry, was there a second?
Yes, there was. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, go ahead.
It's okay. Leanne?
Yes, thank you, Leanne M., Deputy Commissioner, School Finance and Operations. We do have, or you all do have, rules for the administration of the Protection of Persons from Restraint Act. It's our rules 301-45, which talks about the notifications that need to go to parents and the use of restraints and that kind of thing. So there are rules that you all have adopted in this regard. And we were just very quickly skimming them, so
thank
we
you.
Don't know all the
thank
details.
Thank you. I just suspected that there was something. What I'm
and there's been no showing that these rules are inadequate or allegations.
Well,
these
when
rules
they testify
inadequate.
On the bill, we might learn something, but at this point, we don't know.
Well, I don't know if I can say anything because there's a lot of motion on the table,
so we don't know.
We can still discuss it, can't we?
Yeah,
we can still discuss it.
You know, I think when our board makes a decision like this, regardless of how strong we are about that issue, in a bill that needs a lot of work, and we don't, all we can judge it on right now is what we're seeing, hasn't even been to a committee. I personally agree with Board Member Goff about monitoring it. I don't think we have to tell them how we feel unless we feel very strongly, because further on down the road, I see this bill dying its own death or having a morass of amendments on it. And at that time, I think we could 7-0 decide on how we feel. And because we've talked about it, I feel we would be in agreement. But right now, I don't see a need for us to make a strong opinion for or against. And I just say right now, monitor it, but bring it back when it gets through committee and you get a lot more information for us. That's just my opinion.
And you know our questions.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, yes. I may want to make sure I clarify those with you all. It is not scheduled for a hearing because the House is doing the budget next week. It will be at least another week before this bill is in committee. And so we've got some time to make sure we're...
Okay. So do we want to call a vote on this one and then, depending on where it goes, reconsider?
Okay.
Yep.
Please. Board Member Durham.
Yes.
Board Member Flores.
Yes.
Board Member Goff.
No.
Okay. Board Member Masnak.
Yes.
Board Member McClellan.
No.
Board Member Rankin.
No.
Board Member Schroeder.
No.
So, fails.
Could you make a motion now, please, Ms. Rankin?
I make a motion that we monitor this bill until further down the road.
Second.
Can we call that one, please?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Board Member Durham.
No.
Board Member Flores.
Yes.
Board Member Goff.
Yes.
Board Member Masnak.
No.
Board Member McClellan.
Yes.
Board Member Rankin.
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder.
Yes.
So that passes. How did you?
May I?
So... Please plan to bring that back. Board Member Goff?
Yes, I am.
That wasn't included in the motion. Point of order.
What
bringing it back was not included in the motion.
Does that know what monitoring means?
So explain.
You asked Jennifer to bring it back. That's right now not part of the motion.
All right, we've already voted on the motion.
It wasn't part of the motion anyway. Can I make another comment? I'm willing to delve into the answer to my own question here, wholeheartedly willing. I'm going to go back and check to see whether in Robert's rules and or our legislative operating procedures,
that if a motion carries where the motion has been to oppose and that motion is defeated, we are technically in a no position. We have no position, which is not the same as automatically assuming that because we do not oppose, we're open. I guess we could be. That's what I want to check out. I just think the first order of conclusion to a motion to oppose being lost is that we have no position. So if it's okay then at that point to interject a new motion, in this case to monitor. Yeah, but not necessarily. Because a motion that passes to oppose should not necessarily mean that motion or to monitor is the next automatic move to make. I'm just talking out loud, and I appreciate your indulgence, but I'm going to check that out because I think we might want to reinvestigate sometime a little bit closer following standard procedures.
So while you're looking, would you be good enough to look that if we monitor that a bill, something about a bill would come back?
No, there's nothing, no. And then Steve's right on that. Unless the motion included, we monitor under this, upon the contingency that the bill is amended, or there's something more for us to discuss in relation to that bill. So
then monitor is a no opinion. I thought a monitor is that we keep an eye on it and...
That is it. I'm confused. But it's not the same parliamentarily as saying the board is at no position.
Madam Chair, Board Member Goff, if I may. The board actually has a monitor position on most bills, right? Because you all... We actually don't take most bills up for a discussion, and so we do, and we are happy to change our practices. I'm just telling you how we do it right now.
Okay.
We consider that to be a monitor position. There's one bill this year where you all, there was a motion to oppose, which failed. There was no additional motion, and so we have left your position on that one blank on our chart, not as a monitor. Just to...
Right, and... there's nothing you just said it basically, unless something comes up or some further activity occurs around a bill that we've got a monitor position on, in that regard as well, we're always free to bring it back for further discussion. We can change position or stay where we are depending on what new information we have at any time. So And the precedent has been that we have rarely taken a firm support or oppose on anything that has not at least been in one committee hearing. That's the case here as well. So
I think I'm going to need to go back to my concern, which is that I would like to know where we are. What are the rules that we have, and what are the protections for parents and kids, et cetera. Without knowing that, I feel a little...
Yeah, that's perfectly appropriate.
I'm a little uncomfortable just whether
that information.
Exactly what this bill does accomplish or does not accomplish. I might agree with Steve if I know that there are plenty of protections in place.
Can I ask two real quick ones to Mr. King? Doesn't require anything drastic. Well, the first one is, I know it's not appropriate to tie conversations about other bills that are either in place or in the works, but I would wonder, was there anything around this regard at all included in the early childhood discipline bills that are currently in the conversation? That would be, I don't know whether that fits here, but it's just, I can't help it kind of, all right, what's going on here? The other thing would be, if We still have a parent or an advocate person, do we not, for a staff member who handles parent complaints or district complaints, or if there's something that is asking for a resolution of some sort out there, that there is a person specifically assigned here at CDE that sort of facilitates that, moderates those conversations?
Madam Chairman, Board Member Goff, first of all, we've kind of scanned through the rules, and it'll be good for you guys to take a look at those. They mm-hmm. are at the local level, and they do kind of allude to notification to parents and documentation in the student's confidential record. So it would be really worthwhile to look at what's there. As it pertains to the early childhood bill, I'd have to come back to you with an answer on that so that I can better understand what's in that bill and how it connects, if it connects.
Yeah.
So I'd ask for some latitude on that.
Absolutely.
As far as special education and dissatisfaction or concerns about a child's well-being in their school district, we do have a formal state complaint process by which a student's parents or designee can petition our office to do a formal investigation by which enforceable remedies are placed upon that district. We also have due process, that is another option for parents, and mediation. We have a full office committed to that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Board Member Goff, I can tell you the preschool bill did not address the issue of restraint. I mean, I understand why the topics are connected, right, because you're talking about discipline writ large. So, but that legislation is specific to suspensions and expulsions of children. Okay. It doesn't deal with issues of restraint.
Is it still alive?
It is. Oh, it is. It is awaiting a hearing in the Senate State Affairs Committee.
Okay.
Hmm.
Well,
yeah, I thought, okay.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Would you like me to print or send the rules to you?
I would like a cheat sheet.
Okay.
I think we'd like a cheat sheet, wouldn't we? Yeah.
They're not long.
There's seven pages.
Seven pages.
Like seven? Okay.
And there's all the relevant sections.
Sorry. Okay. Shall we?
Yes.
You want to go to the next bill?
Are we ready to go on?
Yes. Okay. Thanks.
So the next bill to talk about is House Bill 1287. This bill is also relatively newly introduced. It is currently scheduled for its first hearing in the House Education Committee on Monday, April 10th, so a week and a little bit from here. I will tell you, typically when I present bills to you, I wouldn't spend any time on the legislative declaration, because legislative declarations don't actually have the force of law. They don't go into the statute books. I think this is an exception to that, because I think it's important to understand. I think the legislative declaration very eloquently lays out the rationale behind this and the reason why people feel like this bill is necessary. So I think it's good to ground ourselves in that as a way to start. I will try to summarize it for you. I'm not going to read it to you. Essentially, it starts by talking about how important our education system is, right? It's a cornerstone of society. It uses the word fiercely competitive, right? We have a 21st century world that is fiercely competitive. That is important, of course, for our system to meet the needs of students and families. And then this is a quote: despite areas of success within the state, student academic achievement is generally mediocre. It's one of the things the bill says. It goes on to talk about how Colorado's existing education system must meet the needs of the state's business and industrial community. And it also describes how the amount of education funding and the local tax burden vary widely among school districts. It goes on to talk about how, in order to create a highly functioning, world-class 21st century learning system, and again, I'm quoting here, the state must create a vision of the learning system as a whole. All facets and stages of providing education within the state must be integrated and coherent. Trying to address pieces of the learning system individually without considering the effect each has on the whole is neither sufficient nor effective. So the first part was kind of some of the rationale, and then this part of the legislative declaration kind of moves into, therefore, here's the approach we're going to take. And it talks about, in creating this vision, it's important to consider the knowledge and skills that students in the graduating class of 2030 will need. We did a little math the other day, and those are approximately students who are in kindergarten now. Colorado must have a strategic statewide education plan to implement the vision. that should be encompassing of early learning through postgraduate degrees, that the strategic plan should be student-centered and designed to ensure flexibility and equity, and that Colorado also needs a strategic statewide education plan to provide a context for analyzing and accepting or rejecting new education technologies and other innovations and ideas for education that will come down the pike. That come down the pike with my words, not the bill's word. And then the kind of, I think, final part of the legislative declaration is to talk about that in order to do this, right, if you're going to create and then implement a statewide education plan, it's very important to have broad support, right? That's not something that three people should go off in a room and decide together and then just assume everyone's going to be okay with. And so accomplishing this level of support requires that all persons who have an interest in ensuring that the state's 21st century learning system is highly effective and globally competitive have the opportunity to be involved in creating the strategic statewide education plan. And this is the final sentence, I think, and I will read it because I do think it's important. The General Assembly finds, therefore, that it is an imperative to create an enduring, comprehensive, and inclusive structure and process for establishing a vision for education in Colorado and for creating a strategic statewide education plan for achieving that vision. We don't, I will say it's also a nice gift to have drafters of legislation put that much thought into the legislative declaration to explain where they're coming from. So that is the bill sponsors. That those are their words, and that is how they describe the rationale for moving forward with this. The bulk of the bill is kind of about the logistics of creating this system and this process and how that's going to happen. It starts with the creation of a Strategic Planning Legislative Steering Committee. So that is a legislative committee made up of legislators. It's there are 10 members. Given the current party alignment of the legislature, those 10 members would be half Republican and half Democrat, most likely. So it's balanced in that regard. And it's that steering committee that really has the overarching responsibility for moving this forward. Those members have to be appointed no later than July 1st of this year, and the first meeting of that has to happen no later than August 1st of this year. The staff to that committee is, as it would typically be, I mean, this is not unusual, the legislative staff, although it does have a specific sentence that says a state department shall provide research or information to support the work of the steering committee. I would guess that a state department might very well mean the Colorado Department of Education. Could mean others too, but I'm pretty sure you all would be included in that. Steering committee is authorized to accept gift grants and donations. It is very clearly spelled out in the bill that the intention is to hire a facilitator. In fact, the bill goes on later to describe the specific duties of the facilitator, but it's very clear that that's what's going to happen. The Joint Budget Committee did set aside money for this, so there is some money set aside in the general fund to fund this work. So this is a fairly long bill, and Madam Chair, I'm happy to continue and get all the way through the description or stop as people have questions. What would you prefer?
This will take a couple questions. Okay. And then.
Do we know the language in Section 22-1-204 that pertains to statewide advisory board created in that section? Is that us?
Well, all of this new language. Yeah, I mean, so the statewide advisory board, that's the next part of the bill. So the first kind of tier, if you will, is this legislative steering committee. Mm-hmm. Then there's the creation of this executive advisory board. That consists of the Commissioner of Education, the chair of the state board, the ranking minority member party of the board, the executive director of higher ed, chair of the Colorado Commission on Higher Ed, one of the co-chairs of the Early Childhood Leadership Commission, and a representative of the governor's office.
Okay, so it does clearly spell out our inclusion, so we're not having to guess about our inclusion. Okay, that helps.
Madam Chair, Board Member McClellan, absolutely.
Thank you. Board Member Flores.
Why are we, I don't know. I mean, I thought that the policy part was the State Board of Education's part, and certainly a vision should rightly come from this body and not from across the street. Secondly, I think one of the most important things we need right now is funding education. I would think that would take priority, that this big kind of entity that's being created should, you know, take part more in the monies part. The issue is we need money, and two, I you know, would like to understand whether the vision part is their part or whether we have anything to do in this. And I think the vision part should come from this body and not from the legislature, or from, not to say that
your question that if a vision is, do we have a part in it, or I'm trying to figure out what your
question is. I think the vision part should come from this body and from this body creating a body to create the vision. I mean, we have a vision up there. I see it. And so, and I know things are getting more complicated with technology and such, but I just think that this is going into taking time and resources and such away from the issue of really getting along, getting into what we've already planned and what is taking place, instead of, you know, kind of reinventing the wheel again. That's my two cents.
Board Member Goff?
Yeah, oh gosh, sorry. I'm trying to find if there's a longer definitions list than the one that's right at the beginning. I think there are at least one word that maybe could use a definition, because I believe it's used differently within our state and as a general, in general context, is a definition of ranking member. I'm not sure that's clear in here. And that's for that, for now, that's enough for that. I agree with Val. I've had similar thoughts. I think probably at the end it comes out maybe differently for me too, but the vision of for the state, you know, it depends on what their picture of it is. Is the vision creation by as a state having a state vision and mission? Should that be a statewide conversation for its education system? I think yes, partly. Where, for example, the state board's role in creating vision and mission, is that necessarily for the entire state, or is it for our role, our function as part of the system governance? I would hope that that conversation gets clarified a little bit, among other things, but I'm not sure I'm not sure what really that means. And I don't know that this bill particularly would have been the place to put specific components of this conversation, which technically probably rests with whoever the steering committee stated. I think there's a lot of committees here. I'm going to have to take some time to get used to this.
Mm-hmm.
But which level of statewide committee it's going to handle part of it. I don't know. I think that's for them to line out, figure out. But I'd be interested in knowing where the notion of what are the components of this work. And I'm not sure it's clear here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of inference to it, and some of it's common sense where it ought to go. But as far as, for example, specifically, a lot of what our vision and mission and purpose work right now, it does rest on the ability to provide resources. So, you know, I hope this has given the state enough time to do this. I'm a little curious about the timelines as they exist here. But that definition list, I would suggest and hope to see some more scrutiny of this entire document to make sure that certain terms are included that may be interpreted completely differently among the rank and file.
Should I continue?
Proceed?
Yes.
Sure. Is that all right?
Pardon me?
I was just going to continue to describe the bill.
Yes.
If that's
yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I will just, I think one thing to point out about the Executive Advisory Committee, it consists of, I'm just going to count here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 members. Three of those actually come out of essentially this body. So I think there is, within that component, a large voice designed for the department and the board. So you have the Executive Advisory Committee, and then, as Board Member Goff points out, there's a lot of committees in this. You have a statewide advisory board. I'm still working on the terminology myself, so that's why I hesitate.
Madam Chair.
Board Member Masnick, go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's hard. It seems like there's a bit of a delay in my phone and what's happening there. I had a question about the steering committee.
Okay, go ahead.
Jennifer, you said that there were equal members of Republicans and Democrats. Is that set in stone? Or I thought I heard you say for this year or currently. Will it always be equal?
Madam Chair, Board Member Masnick, it is not set in stone, and the bill does not specify an equal number of Democrats and Republicans on the steering committee. The way that it is written now, the chairs of the education committees are on, and we know one of those is a Democrat and one is a Republican. There are four members of the House on the committee, two that are appointed by the speaker and two that are appointed by the minority leader. I think it's a relatively safe assumption to guess that the speaker would appoint Democrats and the minority leader would vote Republicans. Same thing goes for the Senate. Same thing goes for the Joint Budget Committee. So I think you're absolutely right to point out that there is nothing set in stone in this particular piece of legislation that would say that going forward, this will be evenly divided. I think it's just given the current makeup of the legislature, I think that's a fairly safe assumption.
Thank you.
Of course. Okay, so now again, I'm on this third committee, the steering committee, and it specifies at a minimum, which means you could add other constituency groups to this, but it specifies teachers, non-teaching staff in the schools, public school administrators, including superintendents, members of school district boards, charter school governing board members, administrators, and teachers, faculty members and administrators from higher ed, parents of students both in K-12 and in higher ed, and actually enrolled students or recent graduates of high school or institutions of higher education. Additionally, persons with expertise in education policy and members of the business community. Those appointments are made by the steering committee, so by the legislature, whoever gets to fill those slots. They are supposed to try to ensure representation of the whole state, including urban, suburban, and rural, and reflect the gender and racial demographics of the state. They are also supposed to, and this, it says this in the law, take into account recommendations received from state organizations that represent the constituencies listed in this section. So I'm going to skip a little bit because I think the next part is it's fairly administrative. And then it talks very specifically, and I will tell you, I think this is unusually specific in my experience, but quite specifically about a facilitator and the process for hiring that person and what that person would do or entity. By September 1st, 2017, the steering committee, which again is the legislative committee, would issue an RFP. It has to be a nonprofit, non-advocacy organization with experience in education policy. The steering committee shall enter into a contract with the facilitator by August 1st, 2017. The duties of the facilitator include 1, creating and implementing a statewide communication plan that has to include regular communications concerning opportunities for the public to participate and provide input. The facilitator must hold public meetings around the state to solicit input. They must convene, facilitate, and staff meetings of the steering committee, the advisory boards, and other local advisory groups. They provide staff support for the steering committee and the advisory boards. They monitor ongoing studies of issues relating to education policy, including school finance, by Colorado Legislative Interim Committees and other education policy groups. They provide research or other services to assist the steering committee. And then there's that famous last word, and other duties and tasks as assigned. So again, let me pause there for a second, because I know this is a lot, and I want to just give it a second to kind of sink in. Are we good to con- So the next thing I'm going to talk about is it lays out kind of the timeline of, to some extent, and the structure of how this work will proceed. Okay, I'm going to keep going. So it actually identifies four specific phases for the steering committee to embark upon. Sorry, lost my verb there. In phase one, they will oversee the work of the facilitator in implementing the communication plan, review and synthesize. I know, sorry. It's been a long week. I'm sorry. I'm stumbling over my words so much today. This is a quote, and I think it's important. Review and synthesize public input previously collected by the Department of Education and the Department of Higher Education concerning the education system in the state. I don't know for a fact. I think that is a nod to the extensive work that you all have just done in terms of the new federal ESSA plan. Again, in phase one, they're going to review and synthesize pertinent research about other academically high-performing states and countries. They're going to identify the critical elements of the existing state system and benchmark the state's implementation of those elements against the implementation of comparable elements in the education systems of high-performing states and countries. Taking into account public comment, they will create a statewide structure and process for obtaining and synthesizing input to create a vision and a strategic plan. So that's phase one. There's no deadline on phase one. There's no time frames established for the different phases, but the different phases are clearly established in the law. Phase two is to, I like this first sentence because I think it sums it up quite well, implement the statewide structure and processes created in phase one. And then you go on continuing to research and benchmark. That's phase two. Phase three is to analyze and synthesize the information collected and create a draft of the vision for education and a draft of the strategic plan. I want to stop there for a second and just emphasize that the whole throughout this whole piece of legislation, they're contemplating kind of essentially two work products. One is the vision. Here's where we want to be. Here's what we think we should do. And the other is the strategic plan for getting there. And I will also note, just and this is just based on my experience, that is somewhat unusual as well. There's a lot of, I think, committees and commissions that are about the vision part of it. They may not call it vision, but something comparable. This is very, in my opinion, consciously saying, we're not going to stop there. It is about the vision, and now it's about how we're going to put that vision into place. So in phase three, when we're analyzing and synthesizing and creating the draft of the vision and the strategic plan, It specifies the elements of the strategic plan, which is to address the entire learning system, to prioritize work on improving critical elements, including establishing timelines for implementing improvements, include a method for reviewing implementation of the plan, and allow for periodic review and, if necessary, revision. And then also in phase three, they're going to submit the draft vision and draft strategic plan to the State Board of Education, the governor, and the education committees for review and comment. So it's at the end of stage three that you get this draft, you get these two draft documents reported back out. State Board of Ed is listed first. I don't know if that helps or not, but it is. And then finally...
Madam Chair?
Go ahead, Pam. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. If you have more to go, I guess.
No, but we can interrupt anytime.
I'm just wondering what might be in the strategic plan.
That's what I was
wondering. Madam Chair, Board Member Masnak, the only detail about what will be in the strategic plan is what I just read, and that it will address the entire learning system, prioritize work, include a method for review. So that's as detailed as this piece of legislation gets about what will be included in the strategic plan. And I am actually getting close to
that. I guess I was actually thinking of, do you have any... You have any notion of examples? I mean, I'm thinking, would their strategic plan be to encourage certain legislation, changes in state board policy rules? Not policy rules, but state board rules around. I mean, what might be in the strategic plan by this group?
Madam Chair, Board Member Masnak, I think all of those are possibilities. So, without specifying that's a requirement. Again, this is just my opinion. I would be really surprised if when that strategic plan comes out, if this all goes forward, that there weren't suggestions along those lines.
you know.
Now, they're suggestions. I mean, that is not a, you know, just because they say that's what they want doesn't mean it automatically happens.
Right. Board Member Flores.
And that was my next question. What, okay. Where does this say? It goes to legislators and the state board members.
Governor.
And then we do what with it?
Well, so, and I know there's another question. Maybe if I just finish describing phase four, it might help inform this particular part of the conversation.
Okay.
In page four, okay. Sorry, phase four, they are supposed to adopt the vision for education in the state and adopt and oversee the implementation of the strategic plan, which includes a recommendation to the General Assembly and the State Board of Ed any legislative or regulatory changes that may be necessary. Now, again, that is just, I mean, that is a recommendation. The legislature has, obviously, as we know, the ability to change statutes and to direct certain activities. In other ways, their authority is limited. Nothing about this proposal, I think, changes the fundamental structure of whose authority is what.
Ms. Let me just, Pam, do you have some more? Do you want to add questions you want to add?
No, it's obviously a something new. I just not. I mean, without knowing what kind of impact it could have, it's a little difficult.
Sure.
I mean, theoretically, the legislature could decide that the state board and legislators in the education committee have to consider this plan. Am I correct?
I think that's getting into an area of law that I'm probably not qualified to speak to in terms of what the legislature can direct the state board to do.
Yeah. This feels kind of a hoped-for process.
Yeah.
Board Member Flores.
Yeah, they could decide that maybe the board isn't necessary. And
that has happened.
And I don't think I... Well, aside, there's all this business about money spent here and then all the private monies that are coming in, and I'm just concerned that what happened nationally will happen locally, statewide, and that kind of is a little bit worrying for me. And two, would the legislature then put monies forth to pay for the research that would be going on here at the department? I mean, that's another. They talk about paying themselves, but they don't talk about paying the department for the work that will need to be done. That's not to say that the work hasn't already been done nationally by several groups, and I'm talking about Stanford. And in fact, I brought forth kind of a project that I thought we could take up and maybe bring some experts here to talk about what had been done with some states and testing and really get at to the improvement of education and what has happened in some states. That happened last year. So it isn't like they're coming up with something new. I'm just worried about all the unanswered questions, you know, about what specifically they're going to do. And I'm worried about all the money that's being spent. And they talk about bringing in monies from what I think the Department of Education had already been doing, and that is bringing outside monies to pay for research and such in this state. So I'm just wondering whether they're concerned about bringing money into the department, and now they're willingly willing to just accept it over on the other side at the legislature. So, I mean, there's so many questions. I really don't know. We have a vision. If they want to have their own vision, I guess they should have their own vision. We're working on our vision, and that's one of the things I think that we as a board talked about when having our retreat, and that is that we were going to talk about vision and what our mission would be about. And so I think maybe they should have their vision about education and what they want to do, and then a mission about how they're going to get the resources to fund education on the whole in this state. I think that's important. I don't mean to be so negative, but, you know, at this point, we just keep working and working. And I'm just a little tired.
May I just add a couple of more details? Because I just wanted you to have all the information on the table as you have this discussion, which I think is obviously an important one. Right now, as drafted, the legislation specifically says that this is a permanent, these are all permanent, ongoing entities. One of the, when we discussed this earlier, one of the things that came up was perhaps that might, perhaps we might ask for some limit to the duration of this project. I mean, that would be one thing you all could do if you want, I mean, depending on how you want to act on this bill, but to suggest some time frame within which it would complete its work. The other issue we discussed is, as it's written, it is the commissioner and the board chair, and I hear your point about the definition of ranking member, but there's no ability to send a designee. And so we talked about allowing for some room in there for kind of a, I think, a comparable designee. I mean, the joke I keep saying is you don't want to appoint me as your designee. That would not be appropriate. But, you know, perhaps another board member, or if Dr. Anthus wanted to have Ms. M, you know, stand in her place, that might be appropriate. So those are two changes that we talked about that might make at least some people on the board more comfortable.
Board Member McClellan.
I just wanted to lend my support to the concept that Ms. Mello has shared with us with the allowance for some substitution or some flexibility. That actually became a really serious problem at the municipal level, where I happen to serve on an urban drainage and flood control district that specified it, that it must always be the mayor pro tem and that would not allow for a substitution. That didn't always work. We had people who were working for a living and simply couldn't make a 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. meeting, or whatever the time was in the middle of the day in the location where it took place. So I think that's really important. So thanks for bringing that up.
Board Member Goff.
Yeah. Thank you. That was, I slipped my memory when we did talk about that the other day. I agree, Jennifer, with the whole, I don't want to have anybody think I'm not in agreement with this concept. I think it's incredibly promising and to have a statewide conversation. But just as we talk about continuing engagement on our ESSA work, I would hope the same thing applies here. I want to see them go in alignment, or anyone else out there that's doing long-term thinking about anything or has put in, you know, exorbitant amount of time and effort into setting a course of some sort. It's very important. You know, I'm willing to give this idea the greatest shot it deserves. I just think some of these details have to be a little bit clearer. I'm not sure about the understanding of the facilitator, you know, whether that's limited to one person who actually is part of a firm or a nonprofit where they have assistance and there are resources available to take care of just that role's needs, and who's going to really be doing the research. The part that is in there about conducting research and gathering and analyzing and making recommendations to, hopefully the first best source is what's already been done. I don't want to see this stuff be repeated. I wouldn't be happy to learn that a lot of hardworking expert people are having to repeat steps either they or someone else has already completed. I think the non-timeline is true in one sense, but on the other hand, there are some definite dates in here. I don't know if I'm totally wrong or not. I can't find it in this text, but I think I read someplace that by 2030, which is actually a logical marker, that's the next generation of K-12 kids, so that by that time we'll have this
vision and mission in place. Can we wait that long on this? And that's why some definite stage and some markers on the calendar would be, in my opinion, very helpful. I'm still a little uneasy with putting completely a legislative group in charge of this at the beginning. I don't know. I would hope that some more conversation can go on about how the general leadership organization is carried out. Sorry.
Madam Chair, just to respond to a couple of those that were questions. The reference to 2030 is just, it's in the legislative declaration, and it reads, in creating a vision for education in Colorado, the state must consider the knowledge and skills that students in the graduating class of 2030 will need to compete. In terms of deadlines, it does require an annual report around November 1st, maybe the 15th, I'd have to look at that again, 2017. But it doesn't, it's not like you must be done by then and submit your final report. It's just kind of a progress report. And it's really dangerous to read between the lines of legislation. Having read a lot of bills in the last 15 years, I do think that they are trying to be conscious about one of your points, which is we should start by seeing what's already there. I think that is rather clearly laid out in phase one, that part of phase one is to kind of figure out what is already there. And I reread the language about the facilitator, and I think it's rather clear that it would be a group entity, essentially. It is not about an individual.
Well, and the work, the steps for the strategic plan come out of the strategic plan, which is why there isn't much about what's done in year four and year six and eight, et cetera. I mean, I think that is what evolves out of the work that's going to be done. Comments, questions? Board Member Durr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple things. One, I think the steering committee partisan makeup needs some work in order to be supported through the process, at least by me, so that you always have that as an equal number, regardless of what happens. Secondly,
equal politically? Okay.
So I think that needs some work. Number two, the advisory board, which I get at 7 members. I'm not terribly happy with that makeup either. I think it needs some work. We can talk about some suggestions on how to shape that up a little bit. And then I don't really fully understand the third group. Particularly well.
It's everybody, isn't it?
I think it's, I'm not sure it's diverse enough, and I think it's a little too large to be effective, but all those are problems that can be solved. And I do think, I feel very strong about this one, that I think to have an ongoing, constantly changing, always updated. I mean, if we've learned one thing here is that continual change doesn't work very well. So I think this group should be given 2 years to get their work done and then they sunset. And that's plenty of time. But if this thing is sort of the perpetual feedback loop, I think it could easily do more harm than good.
On a lighter note, I would suggest that you change the word facilitator to referee, which I think will be a more accurate description of what that person's going to do.
I wrote that one down.
It's on tape, too.
So, Board Member Durham, if you're thinking about a sunset on it, wouldn't there be some, at least, monitoring that would be expected by one of these groups? If, in fact, this is a strategic plan.
I don't think it should be monitored by those groups. There are two, those groups, they're, you might put the monitoring of the objectives that are created and actually make it a department rather than even a state board thing, a Department of Ed function to monitor and report where you have some stability because all these other groups will change significantly over time. So, and I think if this works and it sets things in the right direction, then they can easily recreate themselves legislatively every 5 or 10 years to see if they can improve. But I think if you're in this endless feedback loop, you're never really going to know whether this works or not.
Other comments, questions?
Well,
Board Member Goff.
Thank you. I just, down, it's the down the road thinking. I'm sorry, I tend to do that sometimes. But I want to know, as a Colorado citizen, I'm going to want to follow, I'm going to follow this, whatever it happens with it, because I'm interested in hearing how, where the local control is going to fit in here. I mean, some of the wording right now is pretty, could come across as top heavy, that it will be your legislators and your and other elected officials and department heads and such, sort of calling the shots unless this this stakeholder what or the advisory and citizen, whatever it's called, committees have a lot of variety in how they operate and who they represent. But I didn't hear a lot of tendency, any hints that local control will be a big conversation here. Who knows? The conversation may end up being given some pretty ample time on the conversation of what is local control. What is that really looking like in our state? What do we want it to continue to look like? And how to define it, because we're already in different kinds of conversations in that regard than we have been.
That is fundamentally what this is about.
Well, yeah. And
that
is
fundamentally what this is
about.
It'll
be interesting to see how it veers, whether it's sort of becomes a predominant part of this whole conversation.
Board Member Flores.
Also, I think it would be helpful if all these meetings were televised. I think that the people in this state need to know what is being thought by the legislature, by, you know, other people that are serving.
Are you
on
suggesting
this?
That go into the legislation? Board Member Flores? Or
well,
is that a suggestion start rolling down the line?
I would think that if it's open, it should be open. It shouldn't be just done by a few people behind closed doors. And it could be, I mean, I'd like to know, first of all, who thought of this. And
I think the answer to who thought of this is, I mean, I think we can just look at the sponsors of the legislation. I think that provides a good answer. Representative Hamner and Representative Rankin and Senator Priel and Senator Kerr.
Were you part of it, Angelica? Were you part of this discussion on this bill?
Never heard of it until.
It's probably important to note for the record that they did consult with some department staff people. I think Ms. M was invited and involved in some conversations, which happens on a regular basis, right. Of course. The department's job, part of the job, is to provide answers to questions when right. The legislature or other people ask. So that involvement does not presuppose any position of the board, and we're actually always quite careful to remind people of that. But there was some outreach, just so you know, to CDE staff.
But not to the board?
Not that I know.
Not the bill. Not this first time any of us, as far as I know.
I was asked to distribute to you all a month or so ago a draft copy of it.
Were we gone or something? Yeah. Seems to me I was gone and saw it on my email and it was very long. And
yes.
That was it.
Yeah, because, I mean, something this big would seem to me as if it would have been distributed to the board a long time ago, and I wished, I mean, this was just a few days ago, and I read the whole thing, and then I reread it, and then I just...
No, I think you're right. I think you did send it to us.
The legislators asked me to distribute directly to the state board. I mean, I want to be clear, because I think it's important based on the conversation you're having, but they specifically asked that I just... It was about a month ago. It was a draft of the bill. You were encouraged to provide feedback through a mechanism they had set up.
Right.
That's right.
But not to the rest of us, maybe.
No, it went to the entire board.
We all got it.
We all got it at the same time.
I mean, I just remember reading it just a few days ago.
Yes.
I think it's worth supporting this bill. I think it does need some changes. It needs some work, particularly in, a lot of it's technical in the makeup of the committees. And then I think maybe the more controversial piece of work I think it needs is, does this make any sense as a perpetual effort, which I'm not convinced it does, but for short term, it'd be interesting to see if the legislature can, and this group, which includes several board members and the commissioner, can really come up with an implementable or achievable vision and a plan to try and actually make that work. That's not a bad idea. I think we've functioned without that for a long time. So
I agree.
I think it makes some sense to proceed down this road, but total support should be withheld, at least in my judgment, if the perpetual nature of this sticks.
Board Member Rankin.
I think some of the questions that we have relate specifically to what our duties are here. And I think we have to take a really large 30,000-foot view of what this bill is trying to accomplish. And it has a vision. They haven't decided it yet. They want to get together with all these people to decide a strategic plan and kind of an evaluation of how our state is doing periodically. It's something that connects us to the legislature rather than having them come up with bills and us have to monitor support and some of them I know we really are 100% in agreement, and then something happens on the other side where, you know, it continues on, and that is a concern of ours. I think what this does, and I have to kind of disagree with Board Member Durham, it's an ongoing picture of what our state is doing in education, and it's not something that they just came up with 2 weeks ago. This has been going on, and the research and what are other states doing, and a lot of that kind of thinking is what our department does so well in getting our ESSA plan as number, you know, top in the nation, which I saw at NASB. There are a lot of things that we do that are so far ahead of others. I think this just goes along with the direction of our state, and I think it needs to continue to move forward until maybe it dissolves itself, because we work in silos. This is the big overall arching picture of what's going on in Colorado. It's the thing that's going to say the world is going ahead of us in technology. Where are we in all this? This type of a committee is going to say we got to get on technology now. Or at least, you know, maybe they would say that. Whatever direction they're going might move us in a little different direction. I'm not saying redo everything. I don't think they would even attempt to do that. But to keep us in, what do we say, 21st century? It's not going to be long before they'll say 22nd century. This is, I think, the committee that's going to keep moving us forward without having to take stops and hiccups and trying to understand what the people are thinking, what the teachers are thinking, what our board is thinking. I just find it kind of fascinating for their plans and their checks and balances on their plans. So I would support this at this point.
Other comments? Do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Please.
I make a motion that we support the vision plan in education for Colorado.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any more comments? Ms. Masnick, do you have any more comments before we take a vote?
No, except that I share the concerns I voiced with my questions and the ones Director Durham mentioned. It's not that I'm a no forever, but I'm not comfortable with it as it is.
Okay. Ms. Cordial, would you call the vote, please?
Board Member Durham.
Yes.
Board Member Flores.
Yes.
Board Member Goff.
Yes.
Board Member Masnak?
No.
Board Member McClellan?
Yes.
Board Member Rankin?
Yes.
And Board Member Schroeder?
Yes.
Capital, they always announce that that means it passed 6-1. Okay. Sorry, I was waiting for
it's
you to say that.
6-1.
Sorry, I'm used to the process over there a little bit more.
Thank you, Ms. Mello. Any further, Ms. Goff?
I just would like a short comment time on this just taken vote. You know, I do not have any problem at all trusting and being able to rely on the fact that when we take a position on a bill, especially one of support, that any further discussion, as things develop, are not taken in the best of light and with the respect that they should have. I appreciate all of the reticence on certain points of this. I would hope that we're not considering ourselves grouped into a position or locked into something in any way and have it precluded that we're not going to take the opportunity to talk about it more, and that others would expect us to do that duty as diligently as we're supposed to as well. And I just felt a need to say that. I'm not 100% behind certain preliminary, they may be, but I'm not 100% behind any of them. I agree with Steve on some points he made. I agree with Joyce's overall purpose. This is a thing that our state is truly going to benefit from. But we want to be careful that we do it right and all along the way. And that's, I don't want anyone else thinking we can kind of fall into the, far away radar now. I think it's important we keep careful about this bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think...
Board Member Durham?
I think just to be clear, I mean, I did express several reservations, which, notwithstanding my yes vote, well, I will feel at liberty to continue to express to policymakers should they be interested in the opinion.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That is our right as board members, as individuals.
Madam Chair, may I seek some clarification on the one issue about the designee, right, which I think is a fairly technical issue, not so much a policy issue as some of those others. Do you all want me to talk with the sponsors and see if that is something that we can amend?
Yeah, that'd be good. I think it's a good idea. It seems to me we got, Board Member Durham, didn't we get ourselves a little crosswise on the hub committee because yes. No one could be there for anyone else, and yes. One individual became very ill, et cetera?
I think it makes sense. I mean, I think Dr. Anthus, with her schedule, can't be expected to make every meeting, and right. It would be appropriate for her and perhaps any of us who are, right. might serve.
Some limitations.
And particularly
some flexibility, but also limitations on that flexibility.
Okay. Okay.
Not you. I mean, you've already said you don't want
to
do it.
I mean, I'll get to sit in the audience and listen, as you know.
I'm teasing.
But
you.
Please trust me.
Some people
there's
get
a
all
reason
the good
y'all
jobs.
Get paid the big bucks. And the other thing that I would consider to be somewhat technical in nature, and it's a great catch, is the definition of ranking member. I'm not quite sure how you want me to proceed on that. It is a term used at the Capitol. I don't know if it's a term you all use at the board.
We do not.
Okay.
The term is defined over at the legislature, I think, is the ranking member is designated by the minority party. So they can designate whomever they wish. I don't think it needs any clarification.
Okay.
Well, it depends on if it's in some place, in some context, it implies it's attached to a position as well.
Either position or seniority sometimes.
It ties into who's considered ranking member or not. The state board has not ever done that. We don't really have any non-titular term for somebody who's in any other position except our two elected leadership positions. So for us, it doesn't It doesn't tell us much.
Board Member Goff, do you have a definition that you would like to suggest for what is the ranking?
I'm not going to suggest that until I understand what they are
thinking,
what they're setting this bill up to mean. Who, what type of member, if it's just the state board, that's one thing, but if they're designating other groups in this, in that
were there other positions other than the
I don't believe that, and I would need to do a search to be sure, but I'm fairly confident in saying that the term ranking minority member, minority party member, is only used in describing the second person from the State Board of Education to serve on the Executive Advisory Committee.
But we have an assortment. So, it, you know, our designated other member, who is that? You know, we have Joyce, we have Pam, we have Steve. So I don't think ranking, by putting the word ranking in there, it doesn't just open it up to any other minority member of the board. But we don't operate with a definite designee that fits that word, depending on how they use it.
Well, we have a last name that solves our problem. Ms. Goff.
What?
Rankin?
Oh, for Pete's sake. Why it's didn't I even Friday. Register that?
It's Friday.
And she's going to file the paperwork to add a G on the end of it, and it will all be taken care of.
Sounds like it's settled.
Oh, that's funny.
They just misspelled it. Could you just give them a spelling correction amendment over there?
Technical change, trust me. No one will not like it.
Correct misspelling.
And I don't mean to cut off discussion of this. I just wanted to give you an update on the waiver bill. Would you like me to move to that now? Or?
Yes,
okay.
Sure.
So your waiver bill, what I call the board's waiver bill, affectionately, was in the House Education Committee on Wednesday. Both Jane Goff and Steve Durham testified on behalf of the bill. It was actually a fairly, I thought, kind of an interesting conversation. And there were a lot of questions raised around your all's intention as a board. So as you remember, part of the bill gives you the ability to remove a waiver for good and just cause. We had drafted it that way. Earlier on in the consideration, the thought was, let's put a time limit on them. And then a point was raised that, well, then you're forcing a bunch of people to come back on some regular basis and kind of justify themselves when we don't have any reason to think they're not doing a good job. So that we went to that language and we copied it from your existing statutory authority on district waivers, but there was a lot of dialogue about that particular term, and people, I think, felt some discomfort with the lack of definition around that term. And so we are working to see if we can clarify that a little bit better to the satisfaction of some of the members. We promised that we would work with our sponsor, Representative Patterson, and those other members who are interested to do that before the bill goes to second reading. Because they're doing the budget next week, we actually have plenty of time on that. So, and I will keep you apprised, of course, of how that proceeds. The vote.
Can you share some examples of what that, how that can be defined? Because I think we talked about that we were going to have to define it in our rules.
Yeah, we talked about a lot.
I think the legislature may want to define it, and one of the options we threw out was by the preponderance of the evidence, which is, I mean, good and just cause is a legal standard. It's a lower standard than preponderance. You probably wouldn't take any action on a waiver if you didn't believe that the preponderance of the evidence showed something. I think legislature might be more comfortable with that. I don't think it affects our ability to do anything, and so I think any of those changes ought to be acceptable to us.
Okay. Yeah, we're just worried to make sure kids are succeeding.
Yeah. And again, I will tell you, I just thought it was actually, it was one of those days where there was a good policy conversation at the committee level, right, about I think they learned a little bit more about innovation status and innovation waivers and how those work and what they're applied to. And I thought it was a good exchange. The bill came out on a vote of 10-3, so it was not unanimous. But that's the update. We'll keep working on some possible amendments. Obviously, keep you all very much in the loop on that. And like I said, I expect it will go on the floor sometime. I feel like everything is happening the week of April 10th. I'm not wrong in that. Everything is going to happen the week of April 10th.
And that's because it's a board meeting week.
Of course.
We can always take a recess and run over them.
Yes, of course.
Huh? You, sir, have been wanting to mess with that agenda from day one. And busy is going to...
I just want to say in closing, thank you again for your trust in us as a firm to represent you at the state capitol. We really enjoy the work. It is good work. And we are here for you. If you have questions or concerns, you can call me, you can email me. That is entirely appropriate, is entirely expected, and I hope you won't hesitate to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Sir?
I'd like to give a report on the hearing on House Bill 1271 in the Senate Education Committee.
And I only have my coat on because it's freezing in here.
It's freezing in here. Pam should be glad she's not here.
Don't interpret that as anything else. It's very cold.
1271, Dr. Flores and I did have the opportunity to attend that committee, and both of us had the opportunity to testify and represent the board's position in opposition to House Bill 1271.
1271?
React.
That's the waiver
bill. Oh, I'm sorry. I got it right here. What's the number?
Oh, thank you.
Help me. What was the number?
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
What was the number of the bill?
Ms. M and I were having
I've got the wrong
conversation.
Number. It's in this file someplace. 1270.
I think you were talking about 1161.
1160.
Let me confirm.
That's it.
1160.
1160. So
1160.
I was only one off.
Thank you. One of those bills. That's the bill that allows the primarily Denver Public Schools not to test in English. And I think if you remember the pitches we've heard in this actually testified to us was that have been that these children, there's no reason to test them in English if there's no chance that all they will demonstrate is what we already know, that they don't, that early on as a kindergartner or first year here in an American school that they don't speak English, that shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. Not bad logic, actually, on the part of the proponents of the bill. But at least two, and I think three, witnesses that testified for the bill from DPS, from Denver Public Schools, were quite proud of the fact that they did not educate these kids in English at all until grade four. So the premise on which this bill is based is they don't want to test in English because they don't teach in English. And the admission was startling to me that they would admit that they don't teach classes in English. And I think when we win our agenda opens up a little bit, and we've offered them a compromise or two on this, when the agenda opens up a little bit, I'd like to have the opportunity to have them come in and either explain that we misunderstood their testimony, which I don't, since there was more than one person testifying to it, that's, I think, less likely, or how they want us to believe, or anybody else out there to believe, that the failure to educate children in English for three solid grades in a row makes any sense at all in achieving the objective of trying to ensure that these children have a fair chance in life to be productive. So I just thought, once in a while you learn something in a committee hearing, and that was probably the most startling admission against interest, I think, that I've heard. So thank you.
Well, especially since the younger you learn a second language, the easier.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the other thing that the proponents of the bill, I think, in their casual conversations positioned it that, well, they'll be able to learn English. We just want to find out if they read in Spanish because reading from one language translates to reading in another language. And frankly, as I went through this, I thought we probably ought to compromise on that because I thought some of those arguments made sense right up to the point that they said, oh, by the way, we teach them in Spanish only for 3 years.
Yeah.
And then we finish our hearings. Yeah.
Can I just add one thing to that?
Please, Board Member Ryan.
Yeah. I'm sorry to belabor this, but I recall when Board Member Flores said, when children that speak Spanish or any language are with a teacher at kindergarten and first grade level, the thing they want to do is please that teacher. And as an ex-kindergarten teacher myself, that resonated with me so much as to why it's so important to be teaching them in English. So thank you, Board Member Flores.
Board Member Goff?
I would be really happy to forward all of you a
Do you disagree that that's what they said? Did they say that they taught in Spanish only through grade 3, at least two of those witnesses?
Three.
I think it was three, but I thought it, but at least two.
And it doesn't, I didn't hear any solid evidence that there was no English being taught in those classrooms starting in kindergarten or whenever those kids entered their school.
I think the solid
they were talking about readings.
The solid testimony was that when they went to PE, which would be a separate class, mm-hmm. they might, emphasis on the word might, speak English there.
Yeah, that's where they would speak. Seriously, that was
That was the testimony.
It is Denver. I mean, that's where I hear it. I'm sorry.
Let her talk.
Adams 14, maybe.
Boulder has a dual language.
Well, it's Adams.
Well, I think we want to just, you know, get it all out on the table. This issue goes back to the original allegation that there was inaccurate, I'll use a polite term, submission of reports by Denver as to the literacy results at under the READ Act, as to whether or not they could read and whether or not they were actually reporting reading and leading the department here to believe that was reading English as opposed to reading some other language.
So that's
where it started. That's where this started about 3 years ago. So is it largely a Denver problem? Probably. Were they guilty of that particular offense? I don't know if we're going to go back 3 years and try and prove that one way or the other. So they then initiate an attorney general's opinion. So we did rewrite our rules as a result of that attorney general's opinion. They did, at least someone from Denver indicated to me that the argument that I said had some merit. But I don't think there's any question. Their testimony was crystal clear mm-hmm. that they taught. Spanish only for 3 years.
I'm getting text messages right now that say that's not what they said. So how about we get the
Well, it most certainly is what they... And
how about we get the information, Steve, and then...
But that's what
so if they want to correct the record, they should come here and do it and tell us what they're really
totally
doing.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
But their teachers, the two people who testified that were teachers, and they seem very proud of the fact that they didn't teach English.
See, that's an opinion statement that, you know, neither us or anybody in a school district, really,
well,
we don't have time for that.
That's what teachers were pushed to do.
My main point is, yes, if there's something being there's a little misfeasance or in a school district, then let's get to the bottom of it.
If this bill passes, there won't be misfeasance. It'll be perfectly legal.
Well, hang on a second. I don't want to have anybody giving us inaccurate information. Nobody should get inaccurate information. It's kind of gotten to the point where one district's issue is now becoming everybody else's problem and obligation. This law, in its present form, and our rules in their present form, and even before, affect every single school district. So we're talking about requiring Eagle County, who we heard a lot of backlash on this thing before, every school district is impacted by this. So there's a requirement being put on every single district that may or may not have had an issue with the data and how they reported it. Now the expectation is we're going to give another test in addition to not only the other reading test, diagnostic test that's given, but also another language acquisition in addition to the regular language acquisition test these kids all take. I just think it's gotten a little too single district centric, and it's something that is impacting everybody. And you know, if you're talking about a benefit, a potential benefit for districts, that's, you know, one kind of conversation. This is another load that somebody has to pick up in one way or another. And I don't disagree that accurate data is absolute must. And if there was a problem with that, and is still, then that needs to be dealt with. But to change the whole requirement load on every single district in the state is a little too much for me right now. I can't wrap my head around that.
Was that the end of your report, Board Member Durham?
It is. It was really a joyful hearing.
And it was a joyful report. Folks, have a great weekend. We're adjourned.